Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and fastest growing segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and most importantly, that they cannot be fixed. Our mission is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they are doing so, to even appreciate what they're doing, to expose them. Because condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. It's the most caring and appropriate thing for us to do. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law. As we advance our way through a most revealing prophecy, happens to be in Isaiah, Yashayah, means salvation is from Yahweh, that speaks of how the Syrian war is the catalyst for the tribulation. Ultimately, Yahweh's covenant, one and only covenant, there isn't a new one, there will never be a new one, provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, it's 877-300-7645. As a reminder, in our second hour today, we are going to address the comments, questions of Adam Miller, who is works for GCN. He is in the affiliate division of Genesis Communication Network. His job is to syndicate this program. He has been successful in doing so. And we're going to respond to the questions and comments that he has provided by email over these last few days for several reasons. One of which is that we have new affiliates and new listeners, and providing some background as to why this show exists, how I came to this position, what I know and how different that is from what most believe, I think will be productive for our new listeners and new affiliate. Second, the better we all understand one another, the more effective we'll be able to communicate, the more successful the program is going to be. And the program exists to inform. So we'll be able to reach more people should we all understand one another better. So those are the reasons that we're going to address his comments. We'll do so in the second hour. First, I'd like to turn our attention to Fort Hood. Ivan Lopez killed three people. Injured another 16. Once again at Fort Hood, it was a woman who resolved the conflict, just as it had been back in 2009 with Nidal Hassan, who was a Muslim psychiatrist who murdered 13, injuring 32 at that day. In the name of Allah. It's amazing that, of course, the U.S. government tried him and disallowed any information that would associate him with Islam and prevented the victims, both injured and dead, the families of those who are dead, from collecting additional compensation for having been injured or killed in the line of duty facing a terrorist. They the U.S. government would not allow any association between Nidal Hassan and Islam, which is the sole motivation for his killing. Well, in the case of Ivan Lopez, that is not the case. There doesn't appear to be any Islamic tendencies in his past, but nonetheless, his story is interesting. He served in Iraq, but for a very short period of time. He was a truck driver. Initial reports came out that said he had a traumatic brain injury and that he was being medicated for it and was on antidepressants. Well, I do not know if he was taking antidepressants. I can tell you that he was receiving the psychiatric treatment at Fort Hood. He was definitely being prescribed Ambien because he could not sleep. Those Americans who were sent to Iraq, or those Americans who were sent to Afghanistan, were brutalized mentally. It was hell. In fact, yesterday my wife was talking about the fact that she was listening to radio programs as she was driving across the country, And a former Afghani officer, an American serving in Afghanistan, I should properly present him, on April Fool's told his comrades, all of whom had returned home, that, you know, after lots of soul searching, he had decided to convert to Islam and that he was now a Muslim. And this fellow telling the story said that every single one of his comrades who had witnessed Islam in action in Afghanistan said, well, if that's the case, I think the only appropriate thing for us to do is to come over to your house and put you out of your misery. I think we need to shoot you. Now, they weren't saying that they were really going to kill him, and the American soldier quickly said, April Fools, I didn't commit convert to Islam. But when one is forced to witness Islam in action, the viciousness, the rage, the irrationality, the ignorance, the treatment of women, the treatment of defenseless animals, the sexual depravity, the violence, the carnage, the inhumanity of Islam in action, up close. When a soldier is required to go into a field of conflict where they are being lied to by their government, where their government is telling them that they're fighting to protect Americans, when there are no American interests in these places, and they found that out very quickly, and where they were going in to liberate a nation, when in fact those that they were are supposedly liberating were the very civilians that were killing them, that the conflict between what they were being told by their politicians and by their generals and what they experienced, what they were told about Islam being a great religion and being about peace, and what they witnessed while on duty, was so cathartic, so disorienting, the savagery of it all, the hypocrisy of it all, the lies, everything that they had committed to do and thought was true was inverted. And so a disproportionate number of Iraqi and Afghani servicemen and women can't live with themselves. They come back and they know that they can't trust their government. Their government lied to them. They know they can't trust their religion because their religion lies to them. They know that they can't trust the media because it's lying to them. And they've witnessed such savagery that it's hard to even process. And so what do? Well, many of them commit suicide. We know that 80 returning vets from Afghanistan and Iraq are taking their lives every day. Well, Ivan Lopez decided that he would take his in a blaze of infamy, taking others with him. As a truck driver, what he witnessed was so impossible for him to process, he couldn't deal with it. He's another victim of the stupidity, of the grotesque immorality of George Bush lying to the American people and to the world, perhaps even to himself, and committing American troops to invade that country. George Bush, you killed him. And you not only killed him, you killed those that he killed. You're responsible for the deaths of each of those 80 servicemen and women every day who take their lives based upon what you did, based upon your lie, George Bush. You ought to be ashamed. If you have a conscience, you ought to be ashamed. You ought to apologize. Would be a good start. I mentioned that this is not the only time that Fort Hood has experienced such tragedy. Nadal Hassan in 2009 killed 13, injured 32, screaming Allahu Akbar. His trial was a complete farce. Not only did he defend himself and explain to everyone, confess to the crime, said, yeah, I did it in the name of Allah. I was here to fight in Allah's cause. And yet the judge disallowed all justifications based upon religion, because the federal government didn't want to compensate the victims, their own servicemen and women, for having died or being wounded in an act of terrorism, and because they want to promote the myth that they have prevented acts of terrorism. It's all a lie. Nasser Abdo was also a Muslim who tried to wreak savage carnage near Fort Hood. He tried to blow up a bomb in a restaurant frequented by troops in 2011. Speaking of lies, this one from the media at least is reporting lying by reporting on a lie. The SRN spokesperson said that Kerry has spent the last several weeks trying to coax Israel and the so-called Palestinians into a peace treaty. That's factually untrue. Kerry has spent the last 3 weeks tongue-lashing Russia. He spent the last 3 weeks completely and totally fixated on Russia's troop movements in Russia along the eastern border of the Ukraine, and doing everything he can to demean Putin and the Russians. Every word out of his mouth a lie. That's where he spent the last 3 weeks. Prior to that time, 3 weeks ago, he was in Israel, browbeating the Israelis into suicide. It's amazing that Kerry now is tongue-lashing both the mythical people known as the Palestinians, these ruthless terrorists, savages, and the Israelis, the only rational and reasonable people in the Middle East, while tongue-lashing the Russians, tongue-lashing the Assyrians from, I should say, Syria, Syrians, and time permits, tongue-lashing the Chinese. We have become the nation of hypocritical condemnations. It's amazing that we continue to pretend that we are a nation advancing freedom, the rule of law, civil behavior, when we are the antithesis of these things. We'll return to Shattering This after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering This. We turn our attention now to Washington, D.C. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen, she is the woman who recently took over that position, gave, according to Reuters, a strong defense of the central bank's easy money policies on Monday. Easy money. Yes, sir. Easy money. Yep. We're going to defend the policy of easy money. That's the political mantra in Washington these days. Has been quite some time. Easy money. Don't have to worry about how much you spend. Yeah, money comes easily to politicians. You don't have to worry about whether you have a job. We have easy money. It's called unemployment benefits. Yes, there's a benefit to being unemployed. If you're in California and you're on welfare, you have the equivalent of what, of $21 an hour if you were actually working. So why work if you can get paid the easy money? If you're among the 75 million Americans who is taking advantage of other Americans by taking food stamps, you're part of the easy money train. Yes, indeed. Easy money. That's what the Fed wants to promote. Easy money. She says that it's extraordinary commitments to boosting the economy, especially the still struggling labor market, will be needed for some time to come. Oh, the Fed, with easy money, is doing the work of Atlas, lifting the economy, taking the hand of the struggling laborer, and propping them up with their easy money. Now, mind you, that the Fed became so relaxed with money that it decided that there was no reason to even report how easy making money had become. M3 is no longer reported by the Federal Reserve. That's the measure of the amount of money that is in circulation. And that, we're not talking about currency per se, but digital inputs that increase the money supply. It's had no effect. The Great Recession is still a recession. No matter how aggressively they inflated the money supply, even when they couldn't get foreign countries to buy U.S. treasuries and fund the U.S. debt and its annual deficit. The Fed played this game called quantitative easing. Oh, there's nothing easier than easing, right? And created the illusion that our bonds could be purchased at abnormally low rates by buying them themselves, but not with real money, not with their money, with money easily made out of thin air. All money that now is added to our debt and to our children's debt. In her first public speech since becoming Fed chair 2 months ago, Yellen cited the struggles of three American workers in backing the policies of low interest rates and continued bond buying. The bond buying is quantitative easing, where the U.S. Treasury, unable to sell U.S. Treasuries to individuals, to investors, to countries anymore. No one wants our bonds. Came up with the illusion that we were still solvent by buying the bonds, but without actually finding the money to do so. Just saying we're going to pay and buy bonds with the illusion of money. $1 billion a year in that game. And of course, being a politician and speechmaker, she knows if you can personalize the story, if you can show, oh, there's three workers out there that have lost their job, and oh boy, if I can tell their story and humanize the inhumanity of international banking, I'll look like a loving mother protecting her little children. Then to rise above the mundane, she said, there remains considerable slack in the economy and job market, a sign that further monetary stimulus can still be effective. Can. Not would. Not will. Can be effective. Why did she say can be effective? It's because thus far, since 2008, all of the Fed stimulus programs have failed. They have not been effective. So now all she has is faith, as hope, as potential. But the best predictor of future outcomes is past outcomes. Of future behavior is past behavior. And what we have witnessed is that they have not been effective. So why would they be effective now? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This quote from Yellen, the Fed chief, she said, I think this extraordinary commitment is still needed and will be there for some time. And I believe that this view is widely shared by my fellow policymakers at the Fed, end quote. Yellen said at a community reinvestment conference. Commitment. You know, commitment is when I tell my children, or don't just tell them, I actually act. And I buy them clothes out of money I've earned. I buy them food to put on the table out of money my wife and I have earned. That we prepare that food for them. That we teach them valuable lessons about life and invest in their education. Commitment is when we pay for their education. Commitment to family. Commitment to a job is when you show up on time, when you give them the best that you have to offer. You're committed to the project. Committed is when each day, when we're not airing this show, I study Yao's testimony, considering what he has to say, learning from him, coming to understand the world that he created, the covenant that he has offered, and the means to participating in it. That's commitment. When you are spending other people's money or money that doesn't even actually exist that you just created out of thin air, that's not commitment. You know, it's even worse than the old story about breakfast between the chicken and the pig, where the chicken provides the egg and the pig says, yeah, I know you participated, but I'm committed. There is no commitment here. She's not serving. She's not doing anything that she or her fellow policymakers are providing. No. They're instead capitalizing on the conditions in America. They are perpetrating them and benefiting, profiting from them. There is no commitment. We have Stephen having called in from San Antonio, Texas. Hello, Stephen. Welcome to Shattering Myths.
Hey, Adam. Quick question.
Sure.
You know how the U.S. accuses China of manipulating the currency?
Yes.
And then quantitative easing, how is that different, or is it, or I don't know if you...
Okay. Yeah, what the Chinese attempt to do is to set the exchange rates of their currency. So they establish an official exchange rate. And they'll establish an exchange rate that is conducive to the sale of their products because it supports their people and their country at a level where the products that they make are affordable in other countries. So if a country does not have the ability to establish an exchange rate, then they have no ability to create a playing field that is fortuitous for their people. But a country like China, as the largest manufacturer in the world and the second largest economy, has the ability to influence the exchange rate between its currency and other currencies. And it sets its currency such that it makes other currencies more valuable. So they artificially devalue their currency only from an exchange rate point of view, so that its goods and services are more affordable in other countries. It's what every government that has influence over exchange rates ought to do, because there is no country in the world that ought to be serving the global economy. There ought to be no globalists. There ought to be nationalists, those who are interested in the productivity and the employment and the productivity of their own citizens. But that's what China does. What America is doing is devaluing its own currency, and it devalues its currency by creating more of it without justification. Now, it'd be like if you had your own private island, Stephen, out there in San Antonio, and you built your moat around it, and it was Stephen World, and you had $100 of gold initially, and you said, you know, I'm going to back my currency with gold, and so here's 100 certificates each for a certain amount of gold. And then one day you decided that, you know, there's just not enough certificates here. So I'm going to triple the number of certificates. So now rather than 100 of them, there's 300 of them. But the backing is exactly the same. What you've done is you've devalued each of your certificates. That's what America has done. Now, when you devalue your currency, lots of things should happen as a result of that. The first of that, those is inflation. And the reason inflation occurs is because, not because the value of goods and services increases, but because the value of the money that is used to value those goods and services becomes worth less. The next thing is that when you borrow money in an economy where the amount of money is being increased, you have to substantially increase the interest rates. Otherwise, when somebody takes a note for, you know, 100 certificates, And when the time they have to cash it in, there are now twice the number of certificates out there. They have to be paid more than twice what they offered just to break even. So interest rates have to go up. So they're really quite different in terms of the mechanisms. One is reasonable, rational, appropriate. That's the one not done by America. And the other one is the most egregious form of stealing, where a form of taxation where the government ultimately confiscates the wealth of all of its citizens. I don't know if I did a good job to explain that or not, but
no.
Economic theory is a complex animal. You know, on this program, Ted Anderson, who owns this station, very often offers the book called The Creature from Jekyll Island free to listeners. And the reason he does that is it's one of the best books on American fiat currency, which means the U.S. currency is not backed by any tangible assets. It is it's a debt product. It is based entirely on debt. And that book does a nice job of explaining how the Federal Reserve came into existence, how it's a clandestine private corporation that manipulates the U.S. economy, its history of manipulation, it's the lies that have been perpetrated on the American people to even to accept a bank of like this. It explains that it's unconstitutional, and then explains the mechanisms that it uses to devalue the currency and to manipulate banks and business in the country at large. It is a good read. The only issue with A Creature from Jekyll Island, and the reason I've gone from recommending it to I'm not so sure anymore, is twofold. One is related to this conversation, Stephen. It's communicating the intricacies of economic policy is something that puts lots of people to sleep because it's really esoteric. The second is that The Creature from Jekyll Island was written, I think, 20 years ago. And at the time it was written, the U.S. total debt was in the range of, $700 or $800 billion. And so there was a remedy. The U.S. at that time could have gone back to the gold reserve. We could have paid off our debt by selling government land. And we could have gone on a reasonable course that would have produced a beneficial economy over the long term. That's not the case anymore. You know, we're quickly approaching $18 trillion in debt, plus the unfunded mandates now are another $45 trillion. And we have, in fact, I had a friend yesterday who called me who said, to say that we are approaching a train wreck with our economy is misleading. We're in the train wreck. It's just that the train wreck at this point is occurring in slow motion and no one seems to notice it. This is not a wreck that we can stop. We're right in the middle of it.
Okay.
All right. Is okay. That do you for today?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Stephen. We now have Glenn, a frequent caller from Philadelphia. How's the weather in Philadelphia today? You gave us a nice report yesterday. You said no earthquakes, but a little drizzly.
Yeah. No real earthquakes, and it's actually a reasonably sunny but one overcast day, but it's nice. We've got away from the freezing, and we can go outside with a light jacket. It's a good thing.
Okay. Hey, you heard that the Chileans experienced another earthquake, almost the same magnitude. Things are breaking up down there.
Yeah, exactly. I think this seems to be spreading around. I remember a couple years ago when there was a spate of earthquakes, and I think it was Jim Fetzer or something. They were putting on one guy, and it was really hyped up to the max. And then the solar activity dropped off, and it all kind of calmed down a little bit. But we had activity off the Pacific Northwest, and then they had that mudslide. Then they had the earthquake in L.A. Now we have these. And Chile. So it does. We do seem to be going through another spate.
Yes.
And it does seem to be related to these coronal mass ejections and stuff like that.
You know, I did a study on the frequency birth bangs of the megaseismos that are predicted by Yosha in the last days. And between hurricanes, which are a global event, and while they were ramped up radically in the United States until over a period of like 3 to 6 or 7 years ago, hugely ramped up in both size and frequency, and then now they are ramped up in size and frequency in the other side of the world, impacting Asia. And then I looked at tornadoes, which are also megaseismos, which have just enormously ramped up. We've had, to use your word, the most devastating spate of tornadoes in the United States in recorded history, both in frequency and size, and even coming much earlier in the season than they ever did previously. Then I looked at tsunamis, which would be part of this, and from all indications, the frequency and size of tsunamis is increasing like birth pangs in both frequency and in magnitude. And then lastly, there's earthquakes, and the study on earthquakes suggests that we've, over the last decade or 15 years, have had a huge increase in the frequency of large earthquakes to hit the Earth. So there's something to this. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Glenn. Do you mind if I change the subject, Tony, Glenn? I don't hear Glenn in the background there, but so I'm going to assume that I have
your
permission.
All right.
Unless you've got a real another point that you want to make, I'd like to change the subject.
Okay, I was going to segue the mega size and stuff in with the. I had an original point when I called in about what
okay.
you were making about the economy.
Then go ahead, because the subject, thing that I want to bring up is going to take some time. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. Basically, you were talking about, there was a point at which, the economic problems could have been remedied. And mm-hmm. I was thinking earlier about Janet Yellen and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Well, we all know it's really unethical and cruel to subject people to unfounded fears. And there are ample examples of all sorts of Chicken Little, fear mongering things like that. The antithesis is also, abhorrent, and that is, inculcating false hope in people.
Oh boy, I love that comparison. I don't think I've ever heard anyone bring those two concepts together. We're always fixated as a society on condemning those who are saying the sky is falling. And this network, for example, airs a bunch of shows that say that the world is about to end, so you need my food, you need my water filter, you need my bunker, you need whatever I've got to offer because the sky is about to fall. And by the way, the sky is going to fall. It's just that I'm not sure many of them know the reason the sky is going to fall, and what they're offering isn't going to save you and your family from it. But those who that's the most interesting part of the whole thing. But what difference this program from other programs? Because we're not offering a human solution here. We're telling you God's remedy, and He is darn right reliable. We as a society have had this tendency to condemn those that aren't happy talkers. As a matter of fact, when George Bush, who I condemned earlier in this program, was asked about exercising good judgment. His answer on exercising good judgment was always being positive, always giving people hope. So he immediately recognized that there's no such thing as good judgment in the mindset of voters these days. They don't think.
Mm-hmm.
They hope. And so the worst thing you can do as an individual is to tell them the truth when the truth isn't hopeful, according to that theory. And that's the political theory. And what you're doing is you're equating that and saying, on the other side of the coin, giving people false hope is every bit as bad. I think that it's worse than that, Glenn. I think giving people false hope is worse. I think it's far more wicked. To warn somebody that if you go around this next bend, that you're going to be wiped out by an avalanche is evil. And that's why I say in this program, exposing and condemning the malfeasance of government and religion and politics and the like isn't mean-spirited. It's compassionate. But by the same token, the opposite side of the coin, the political pontificators that are constantly offering people false hope and the religious advocates that are offering people false hope, that may even be worse.
Right. Ashamed of Monty Python's always look on the bright side of life.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
From Life of Brian, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly.
And what I'm bringing up specifically is I'm hearing, like, these signaling people who should know better about the prophecies of God. Like we know that certain things are from, you know, right. what Yahweh says in the prophets are have right. to happen. And,
right.
Yahweh, those things have to occur or Yahweh is a liar.
Correct.
So we know they're going to happen.
Right.
And yet these goofy people will offer, oh, well, they should listen to my solutions for Fukushima. They should be doing this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
Or the economy.
Let's just be specific here. Or we can bring peace to the Middle East by demanding that Israel give up the West Bank. And thereby diminishing Israel to about 5 miles wide at the midsection where 70% of his people live, that's what the United States is now demanding Israel do. And Yahweh in this very prophecy said that when Israel is thinned, she will not be sustainable. She even says that America is the country that's going to loot Israel in this way, and that the immediate outcome of that is going to be world war, and that Muslims by the hundreds of millions are going to engage in this war. And so you're right. How could you offer that as hope when God says that's what leads to disaster? Back in a moment.